This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We continue Comedy Week with Steve Martin. He became a national star through his frequent appearances on Saturday Night Live, and that led to his film career, including starring roles in The Jerk, Roxanne, Pennies from Heaven, All of Me, Parenthood, and Father of the Bride. Here's an excerpt of his act from the late 70s, as recorded on his album A Wild and Crazy Guy.
Well, thank you very much. Great to be here for the closing night show here at what is this? Is this San Francisco? Okay, been here for 2 weeks, and this is the closing night. We do two shows tonight, and I'm really looking forward to it. So, so let's get going, huh? I mean, I think there's nothing better for a person to come out and do the same thing over and over for 2 weeks. And this is what I enjoy, so I'm just going to do the same thing over and over and over, and I think rather than do it just twice, I think I'm going to do it over and over. I'm going to do the same joke over and over in the same show. This will be like a new thing. Looking for a little different kind of thing tonight, so then this would be good. Okay. Hey, I'm not trying to be a big shot or anything like that, but I get my drinks half price. That's right, for every one you buy, I get two. So I can just have about as much as I want, you know what I mean? And it doesn't affect me.
I spoke with Steve Martin last year about his early stand-up act. He had been a philosophy major in college before switching to theater in his fourth year, the year he dropped out. I asked if he could think of any part of his act that was influenced by philosophy books he read.
Not really, but I did understand that that you know absurdism came into my act quite a bit, so I think that somehow that was linked to philosophy because it was always denying the truth or making leaps to things that weren't logical or it's so it's hard to remember all these things, and if I did, it wouldn't be that interesting, you know, to say, well, yes, this was based on Aristotle's, you know.
That's right.
Because they're not. They're just based on trying to make people laugh, and that's what came out.
But I am into the intellectual thing. I went to college. I studied the great philosophers, Socrates. I studied Plato, and you know, you learn the important things. Like, if you're studying geology, which is all facts, as soon as you get out of school, you forget it all, you know? Because it's just numbers and things. But philosophy, you remember just enough to screw you up for the rest of your life. You know? And you study the important, like, ethical questions. Is it okay to yell movie in a crowded firehouse? Religious questions. Does the Pope shit in the woods? And keep waiting sometime, you know. Oh. If there is a God, give me a sign. See, I told you that the
So many comics approach their comedy from an ethnic perspective. There's a long history of, you know, the Jewish comic or, you know, the Jewish dialect comic or, you know, African-American comics talking about coming of age as an African-American in predominantly white America and so on. Did you ever wish that you had, like, an ethnic slant that you could use in your comedy? Or were you not ever interested in heading in that direction?
No, not at all. My comedy was much more mental, and I didn't it was strange because it was physical and mental at the same time. It was almost conceptual sometimes. So that wouldn't have done me any good. And that comedy exists in the real world, and my comedy didn't.
Yeah, that's interesting. What do you mean by that, about it not existing in the real world?
Well, it doesn't. I always thought of my comedy character, such as it was, as a person who was totally isolated and who had to, in a sense, redefine the world in order to get by, couldn't be influenced by the outside. He had to deeply believe in every dumb thought that he had. So that's the most sophisticated it's ever gotten. I mean, just saying it to you now, because I never thought about it that much, but kind of looking back. So it wasn't about a person in this world. It was strange. It was about a nutcase in this world.
I think it was after the Smothers Brothers when you were doing stand-up and you were better known at this point. You did a lot for opening for rock groups.
Yeah.
In concert arenas, was it? Was it
that I did all that. It was terrifying because, I mean, Albert Brooks has a great bit where he says he opened for Ritchie Valens once and he was backstage and he hears the audience going, Ritchie, Ritchie, Ritchie. And he starts to go on to open the show and there's a guy backstage who is going to open the curtain. He looks at Albert and says, you better be Ritchie.
So they weren't
exactly
necessarily happy
like
to see you.
No. But I learned quickly that you don't do that.
You don't do what?
You don't open for big rock bands with a small comedy act.
So where did you go?
I went to small clubs. And I places that seated 99 people. And I called David Brenner, who was very hot at the time. And I said, David, how do you make any money in this world? I mean, I'd get paid, you know, $300 a night, and it would cost me $450 to get there and back. And he said he leased out would lease out a club, and he would take the money at the door. And so I said, well, that's what I'll do. So I started going to little clubs and headlining rather than opening, because I understood the audience, no matter how good you did as an opener, they didn't care. They only cared about the headliner. So I decided to play to smaller houses and be a headliner than open the show for larger houses.
Well, anyway, I guess you can tell that I'm into language, and language is kind of my thing, being a comedian. And if you don't have a command of the language, nothing to be embarrassed about, but because this is my profession. And let's face it, some people have a way with words. Other people... not have way, I guess.
Did you ever think that you were going to outgrow some of your comedy, that it would be unseemly after a certain age to do some of the
absolutely
physical comedy that you were
doing?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. And it's a, you know, it's a, comedy is like, it's an agreement between yourself and the audience that you are funny.
Right.
And you know, that you can get very, very hot, and then that agreement can go away. It can move on. It moves on to other places. You know, right now Jim Carrey's got it. And he is actually really, really funny. But when that magic agreement is kind of severed through time, and you say, okay, well, now what are you going to do next? You have to actually be funny. You know, you have to really, really work. And, and you have to find it some other way than just the newness and excitement of it.
I'm wondering, in your work as a writer and a performer, what you think the mix is of inhibition and exhibitionism, if you know what I mean? A lot of performers strike me as being a very interesting mix of inhibition and exhibitionism, of really wanting to show off, and of, on the other hand, being really shy and very uncomfortable around other people.
Well, I think that entertaining is the excuse to open up. So I feel myself very shy. I mean, when I started out, very shy around people. But as you get comfortable with your friends, you really open up, and that's where comedy comes from, is, you know, going crazy with your friends and then trying to put it on stage. And... But there, I know what you mean. There is a kind of quietness that comes, and maybe because of that quietness, you're compelled to go on stage and let something out, and try to be liked, you know.
Steve Martin recorded last year.